Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. No worries for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who were without William Nylander for mysterious and unknown reasons and got outplayed significantly on special teams and had the clearly worst goaltender of the two on Saturday. The head coach likely to be terminated if they lose this first round series. No worries, though, going into game two tonight in Boston.
Literally the only guy on the team that could have given that quote and it come across okay. Everybody else, I'd be like, I guess that's what you got to say. I feel like I want a little more tension coming out of this here. And maybe that's not the way to go about it, but God, it's I can tell you, it's certainly not how the people outside of that room are feeling as Hakuna Matata.
Maybe he's got no tension. It does feel like there are some Maple Leaf players who are playing under some tension. All right, let's talk to our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Damian Cox, Toronto Star contributor, our Leafs historian. Hakuna Matata to you, Damian.
Hakuna Matata right back at you, although the other night looked more like when it was when Scar was luring Mufasa into, you know, the hyenas. That's what it looked like to me.
Oh, great.
Good pull.
Right?
I don't remember, but yeah, I'll take your word for it. But yeah, that sounds right.
You gotta know your Lion King reference.
You know, I know it way too well right now with a 3-year-old at home.
Yeah, I have two.
Oh, really?
I have two young boys, and yeah, we haven't gotten to Lion King land. But yeah, no, that feels like a hole in my resume. Need to show that to them.
Feels like pregame viewing after school today, maybe. I don't know.
What are you doing? Reading to them? Come on. Put them in front of the television.
Just Kuman math all day with Ben.
Not so much. It's no big deal. They lost to the Lightning 7-3 in game one last year and then won game two 7-2. Okay, and listen, Damon, they also controlled the shot attempts at 5-on-5. Okay, where are you on the, like, no worries scale?
Oh, I'd be very worried. I mean, there was nothing in that game that surprised me the other night. It was stuff that you'd seen all season long at different times, right? And it's the inconsistency of the effort and of also of the structure. And you see it then when they play a very structured team like the Boston Bruins, that the Leafs structure might be there for, it was there for what? 2.5 minutes before Ryan Reeves makes the wrong read because Joel Edmondson's pinching and all of a sudden the structure's gone. It's a 2-on-1 and then you go like that. So, no, I think, you know, there were parts of the game where the Leafs were in it, but 5-1 seemed right to me. There was an opportunity right at the start of the second where the Leafs stars, Tavares, Marner, Matthews, 4-on-3 power play. What more could you ask for? And they didn't get a single clean chance. So, you know, I'd be very worried because the worst tendencies of the Leafs were on display the other night.
Yeah, I think there's many things you could kind of pick at with the worst tendencies. I think the thing I've been kind of poking at the most this morning is that they, maybe never is too strong, but they rarely seem to be able to walk the line in a way a team like the Boston Bruins were. I mean, you know, it's not like Boston was unphysical. It's not like they weren't poking the bear a little bit back. But, I mean, you see Domi, he takes the slashing penalty, and I don't think anybody here has a problem with Max Domi getting in Brad Marchand's face, but you certainly don't want to take a penalty to do it. It just seems like this team has such trouble kind of finding the right side of the ledger. They have that in the regular season at times, but they've had it in the playoffs in spades.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrible combination, right? A team that is very poor at penalty killing, taking offensive zone penalties. I mean, that's just a recipe for big-time trouble. I think the penalties were certainly a part of it, but they're also a function of the fact that this team really struggles to get out of its own end. I mean, I'm watching the other night and started counting the times the puck would go into the Boston end and come right out. And the puck would go into the Toronto end, and all of a sudden, we're going to start reversing it and backpassing it and fumbling it. And then it starts, and then you end up drawing a penalty. And so, like I say, I mean, it's obvious that you can't have that many penalties if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs because you don't kill them very well. Mm-hmm. But it's the inability to get out of there. And the inability, guys, we talked about this, you know, toughness in the playoffs and all. They don't score in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They score in the regular season. When it matters, they don't score in the playoffs. Why that is, I think it's really probably that you need more of a psychiatrist than a hockey coach, because they just look flustered. Mm-hmm. Like they're trying to score five goals at once, and then they can't get one. And obviously their opponents, you know, somebody said to me, why do they always lose in the first round? I said, well, to be fair, one of the functions is they play in the toughest division hockey, and they draw a very difficult opponent every single year. The Boston Bruins are an excellent team, one of the top two or three in the NHL. They are tough to beat. And so the Leafs, unless they're going on all cylinders, unless they score goals, they can't win this series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's the playoffs. The San Jose Sharks are gone. Like, yeah, they're all tough teams. But yeah, no, it's for sure the one of the toughest, if not the toughest division right now. So Austin Matthews scores five goals in the six-game series against the Lightning, right? And it does... Like that part of it papers over a little bit the scoreless in five games against the Panthers. It was definitely a conversation coming out of that series, but it's like, man, five goals in six games in a series that you won and you finally broke through in a postseason series. I think largely at the end of these postseason series, it's been Mitch Marner, the face of failure, right? And Austin Matthews hasn't been it. But, man, if we're talking about a 69-goal season coming off the five games against the Panthers and then, you know, the rest of the series goes like game one did against the Bruins where he's loath to find the net, I mean, how much does he put himself in the crosshairs?
Well, I think if you start looking at one guy and saying he's not scoring, you're kind of – I just don't think it makes a lot of sense in the playoffs because it's such a team game. And the other team is doing everything to take away that one guy. So, obviously, you're going to need him to do things. And I thought Matthews was okay the other night. I thought he was involved. But, I mean, Marner and Tavares, just not threatening offensive players at all. And so, if what Boston's going to do is we're going to take Matthews away. So, you don't get him. So now we're going to take our chances with Mitch Marner and John Tavares, and obviously no Nylander as well, and Morgan Riley. And those guys didn't hurt them at all. Didn't hurt them at all. I mean, David Kampf was the guy who scored the goal. If Marner's not going to give them that, I think we're back into the discussion of what happens with him and his contract this summer. Because, you always want to be fair. A late season high ankle sprain is not a great injury. It's a very difficult injury to get over. And so there's that. But he's out there. He's playing. He's doing his usual thing. But there was a classic moment late in the game. I think it was Bertuzzi in front of the net, surrounded by five Bruins, and not another Leaf in the picture because they're so far out on the periphery. I mean, Mitch Marner is so far away from the net. That and you saw it on the 4-on-3, the endless passing and then no clear chance. So he's a guy to focus on, but I think it's one of those funny things. Yeah, you want Matthews to score, but these other guys have got to come through.
Yeah, it's hard not to think about the future with Mitch Marner, right? If the rest of the series goes the way game one went, and there are numbers to back up what we all saw with our eyes, he was the lowest rated Maple Leafs forward in regards to individual expected goals. That's like how many expected goals you by yourself created. He was the lowest rated forward of any of the forwards on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And he's got this contract extension that is due. He has the no trade clause. And I think some people are envisioning a scenario where he tries to do the William Nylander thing where he holds off negotiating until the regular season. And then he has this incredible start to the regular season, puts the pressure on the Leafs. I mean, how is that going to happen if you have another postseason series like this? Like, it's just going to be hard to ignore what he's been in the postseason, even if he gets off to a tremendous start during the regular season next year.
It becomes a very, very awkward scenario for everybody. It really does, because He controls a lot of what can and can't happen to him. But he also becomes, if they go out in the first round again, and particularly if they don't play better than this, he becomes the one major chip you can play to change your team. You can't trade Matthews. You can't trade Nylander. You could do something with Morgan Riley, who I kind of am starting to feel is getting to the end of the line in Toronto. It's just not happening the way he or the team would like. But Marner is the guy that you can make the play with. And they've done the stability thing, which I think is tremendous. You're going to change the coach, you would think, if this doesn't go well. But Marner, in terms of going out and getting a player, you know, getting out a guy who can really change your roster, because other teams would kill to have this guy too. He's just, you know, it's not that he's not an outstanding offensive player, because he is. He's one of the top, 25, 30 offensive players in the NHL. The Leafs have some of those guys. And what they're missing is the other guys. And I think you saw it the other night. So, look, there's an opportunity tonight for these guys to bounce back. And no series is decided until somebody loses on home ice. And all those things come into play. But, you know, there's also a psychology about the Leafs playing the Boston Bruins. So I think you saw some of that on display the other night.
Yeah, that's the thing about this series that we all kind of had pegged heading into it, right? And whenever it's a mental aspect, you know, that's always a little wishy-washy, right? Like, we're literally sitting here guessing at what's going on inside of these guys' heads. But I feel like it's a little bit less of a guess after seeing that first game. I mean, it's easier to do when, you know, like Max Domi slashing Marchand on the wrist, he's getting penalized. Yeah, it's easier to be the bigger man when the other guys go into the box. That certainly helps. And it all just goes back to what I was saying about them not kind of being able to be on the right side of the ledger of these things. With Marner, you know, I think the interesting thing about him, and Ben and I were talking about this, and, you know, who knows what happens with Nylander. Maybe he plays tonight. Maybe he's back in the lineup by game four. Again, who even knows what's going on? But I feel like William Nylander, not, let's say it's a doomsday scenario and he doesn't play in this series, or he doesn't play until a game six or a seven or something like that. The conversations we have about the team, because William Nylander's not there, are very different than the conversations we have about a Matthews or specifically a Marner, because Mitch Marner's ability on the ice really shouldn't be hampered or bolstered all that much by Nylander being there or not. Like, that is the interesting thing, I think, that could potentially come out of all this is, again, who knows, maybe Nylander plays tonight and this is a moot point. But if he's not there, I think it does affect the way you have to talk about the team as a whole, but it doesn't really affect the way we talk about any of those top guys. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do and I don't. Again, we do get caught up. I mean, it is a team game, and that's why I get a little annoyed when everybody harps on the blue line, you know, because they can't get the puck out. Look at where the Boston defense, they're not doing anything fancy, but they know where their forwards are going to be. Their guys are in their spots, and they're there to win battles along the boards. Leaf forwards do neither of those two things. They're unpredictable where they're going to be, and they don't win battles. So those two things. So, and again, with Marner, it's got to be, he's not going to go out there and go through the whole team. He can't do it himself. He's got to find a way to collaborate with whoever he's on the ice with and make things happen. But he can't do it 60 feet from the ice. And I just back to the psychology too of the team. I just get this feel that Boston feels like we own these guys. And I thought what was really interesting about the Domi Marchand stuff the other night, Marchand didn't even look at him. He didn't, from the opening faceoff to when they did that little jousting and the slash, he didn't even look at him. He is like, you aren't even in my league, man. Why would I even bother with you? Go ahead, take a penalty. I'm not going to buy. And I think it's that Bruins' really strong sense of superiority over the Leafs, particularly in a playoff scenario, that you just feel it. You really do.
Yeah, and it's hard to argue with, considering five consecutive victories for the Bruins over the Leafs this season, one in the postseason, game two tonight from Boston. So looks like, again, maybe no William Nylander, although the bizarro skating and the optional thing yesterday. I get it. Everything's cloak and dagger when it comes to injuries in the postseason. This one is very, very weird considering how there was just like no warning at all. He played all 82 games. He's played every game the last 8 years outside of the COVID season. Is there precedent for this? You're a Leafs historian. Do you recall something like this? This is so bizarre.
Well, I remember when they played Carolina back in, what was it, 02 in that series, and all of a sudden Matt Sundin's not there.
Right.
And there was that, and then a couple of other guys didn't come as well. So that's 20 years ago. So that kind of serves as Leaf history. Look, I think everybody loves to be a – he's hurt. I mean, this guy plays. The one thing he can say about William Nylander, he's durable, he plays. So what's wrong, who knows? It's some goofy little injury, probably a leg, a groin, a knee, something like that, that doesn't allow you. Or sometimes it's in these scenarios, it's a hand, right? You break a finger, you can't play. And no one even saw it happening. That's a huge loss. But I would argue they've still got enough to play better than they played the other night. I don't know if they've got enough to beat the Boston Bruins, but they've got enough to play better than that. I think they need a better game out of their coaching staff. Like, why Ryan Reeves has got to be out there when you know you're taking a big risk early in a hockey game? And why is Joel Edmondson, why does he think he's got a pinch that early in the game? And part of that is guys who are unfamiliar with each other, and part of it is a structure that's built around guys who freelance and score goals, not, get the puck out of their own end. So I think Sheldon Keefe's got to step up here and get this team going. And, we talked about this last week, guys. The attitude of him and this team in those final couple of games of the regular season, I thought was brutal. Just brutal. They behaved like a team that had won 3 Stanley Cups. Oh, we don't even care. We're not even paying attention. Last game, Sheldon Keefe says, I was scouting Boston between periods. I wasn't even coaching. Like, who the hell does this guy think he is?
Yeah, somebody scouting Boston, not overly worried, I guess. I don't know. Maybe could have spent a little more time scouting. Obviously, there were things. But
yeah,
you mentioned Edmondson pinching, Revo being out there. Does that not all just go back to the psychology stuff and them feeling like the route to beating Boston is, I mean, obviously they know it involves scoring goals, but they think that's the route. I mean, Max Domi, nobody needed to tell him to go out there and get in Brad Marchand's face. But it's obviously a directive. If you mentioned the coaching staff, it comes from him as well. Like, I think that's the reason, that's where the psychology stuff is the most at play. It's not that the Leafs shrink up and they go, oh my God, it's Boston, we can't beat them. It's they stop being themselves because they feel they have to beat them in a different way.
I think that's exactly right. And I don't really blame Max Domi. He's trying to do something
for sure
for the team. I think he's trying. He's an average to good NHL player who's dealing with a star in Marchand and trying to knock him off his game. That's a tough job. That is a very difficult job. And Ryan Reeves, he's out there trying to land the big hit. But the Boston Bruins play the same way all year long. The Leafs are trying to say, okay, now we're going to change. And, now we're going to do something because that's how we have to do to play these guys. I mean, I literally heard an NHL player tweeting the other night about how, they've got to fix those special teams, but after the game one. You think you're going to fix that penalty killing after in one day? Are you serious, man? Like, look, the Leafs decide they really think they can play different ways at different times and turn it on and turn it off. They tell you that. Sheldon Keefe told you that. Oh, I don't even know the score of the final 4 games. We'll be ready for the playoffs. Well, we'll see, man. Sure didn't look like it the other night.
Yeah.
That's twice I said, man. Like, am I stuck in the 60s?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Keep trucking. Or what is it?
Keep trucking. What's that?
I don't know. Isn't that like one of your sayings from your generation? I don't know.
Yeah, what are you stuck in the convoy? Convoy.
Yeah, keep on trucking. That's an expression. Keep on
That's
trucking.
Not the 60s, man.
Oh, okay. All right. Different.
Man.
Anyways. Yeah, I thought you were such a groovy cat.
No, certainly not. There's not even like the levers to play when it comes to roster manipulation because, Bobby McMahon's hurt. There's no like, hey, they need a goal.
Yeah.
So here comes Nick Robertson. He's already there, right? The one move they have is, I guess, and maybe if you are looking to improve the penalty kill, TJ Brody does that. I mean, do you pull the lever of once again lifting Timothy Liljegren from a postseason series?
Well, and actually, I have a bigger question for you. Do you pull the lever and go with the other goalie?
I mean, I wouldn't tonight, but certainly if he loses tonight, I'm going. And if he allows a couple of softies in the first period, like, that's it for me, and I'm going to Joseph Wall.
I think I'd go to Wall tonight because that allows you to come back with Samsonov at home. If you're
you
down,
think you can do that? His mentality will allow him to get back in there, and you get the best version of him after you.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, you're dealing with a very flighty guy. And I think Joseph Wall showed last year in Florida he could play very well. So I think they're kind of 1A and 1B, to be honest. And Samsonov, that was disappointing the other night. He made a couple of really good saves. But, you know, boy, oh, boy, yeah. And the other one, too, is even on the two-on-one. Mm-hmm. Who was the defenseman? I meant to go back and double-check it.
It would have had to have been Liljegren.
Yeah, because it was Edmondson. And we know where Edmondson was.
Yeah.
Right. So in what hockey manual do they say, by the way, on the two-on-one, don't take away the pass or the shot. Fall down to the ice.
Correct.
Like dive on the ice. Like, what kind of defense is that? And, again, I really think in a lot of these small areas, guys, this is how this team's coached. You know, this is how this team's coached and what they're allowed to do. So, if Liljegren knocks that puck down, it's a spectacular play. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather see him take away the pass and make Samsonov face that shot. Mm-hmm. So Samsonov probably doesn't even know what he's going to do. But anyways, back to that. I think I'd go with the other goalie and hope for the best. But right now, you need so many other things to happen, right? Yeah. Tonight's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, we'll see if they have the same pushback they had in Game 2 against the Lightning last year. Yeah, I think Jeremy Swayman's playing a lot better than Andrei Vasilevsky was in that series, though. And
he was sharp.
Yeah.
He made those. And that's the other weird thing. I know we got to go, but Swayman makes two really good saves early in that game where the Leafs are on the board before Ryan Reeves has a chance to make the wrong read. And then you're into a different – that's the thing. Boston against the Leafs always score first. They're always ahead.
That's true. They know how to defend a lead. Damian, always a pleasure. Keep on trucking.
Boys, Hakuna Matata, all right? Think about that.
Yeah, I will.
Get those kids in front of the set. We don't need them reading and doing math. Get them in front of those videos.
Yeah, who cares if it's nice and sunny outside? Get inside! Watch yourself a movie.
Oh, no. It is 2024. You sit outside with your tablet and be an iPad kid and watch The Lion King.
Good call. Hakuna Matata.
Oh, man. Right. Okay, boys. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Damian Cox, Toronto Star contributor, Leafs historian, and our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
If I could add one more point to the two-on-one, and I know I've made this point before, but you could also, for a guy who had 10 points in 52 games and was playing in his first career playoff game, you could just stop it. I have seen guys make a save on a two-on-one before. When you're a goaltender for a team that wants to do something, you got to make a big save in a big spot, and it's not always easy, okay? Mm-hmm. Great. You made some big saves when the game was already over. Mm-hmm. You needed that one there. And you know what else you needed? A save on the first shot of the second period as well. Pick one. I know I am Sheldon Keefe yelling at Steve Breer, who's not even the goalie coach anymore, and you're certainly not responsible for this, but you're here, so you got to hear it. I don't care. Pick one. Pick one.
You know where else they could use a save? On the penalty kill.
Agreed. You're allowed to save those as well.
So the Maple Leafs are eighth from the bottom in the NHL in regular season shorthanded save percentage. Here's a sampling of the teams around them. San Jose Sharks, Arizona Coyotes. Now, it should be said, the Edmonton Oilers are there too and the Winnipeg Jets. But that's, I understand it's quality shots sometimes. Mm-hmm. I didn't see, like, that didn't look like Kucherov one-timing it, right? Like, that's you can get a save killing penalties as well. They didn't get one in any scenario yesterday or on Saturday.
It does feel – we have said today. Yesterday all day because it's hard to do that. It's lingering.
I know.
You have to let it linger.
Today on 680, you can listen to the Toronto Maple Leafs and, of course, watch it on Sportsnet at 7 o'clock, Game 2 from Boston. All right, when we come back, talk to a former Bruin, guy who's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. He has two Stanley Cup rings.
Are they plugging his ear? I hope not. We're going to call him.
Yeah. He's currently Blue Jackets assistant coach. Mark Recchi joins us next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gutting. Leafs with the ability to change the narrative tonight in Game 2 in Boston after a very disappointing 5-1 loss on Hockey Night in Canada in Game 1 of this series. Let's talk to a two-time Stanley Cup champion, Hockey Hall of Famer, currently Blue Jackets assistant coach. It is Mark Recchi on the line. Thanks for doing this, Mark. How's it going?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks. How are you guys?
Doing very, very well. I'm sure Brad Marchand is doing very, very well after he did the thing. His team won. And like right off the opening faceoff, he's going at it with Max Domi, eventually goading him into a slashing penalty. You obviously shared some Stanley Cup final ice with Marchand. How much do you think he relishes this matchup?
Well, he relishes, every game. He's that type of player. He's their leader on their team. And he knows what playoff hockey is all about. And I mean, he plays like that every night, and that's the reason they have the culture in Boston. And, obviously he grew up with it, and, he knows what he has to do when it gets to that time.
Yeah. So you hit on the word that we've all been talking about a ton this morning is culture. I mean, you played on a ton of great teams and a ton of great orgs, but Boston's the pertinent one right now. So we'll stick there. Did you see something in Marchand early on in his career when you were there of like, this guy can develop into that leader? Is it that he was baked and bred in that Bruins culture with Bergeron and Chara? And just let me quickly apologize to all the listeners. I know you're like rolling your eyes right now. I don't want to hear it either, but it's true. What do you think it is about Marchand, and is it just that the Bruins were able to kind of incubate him in the right way, and obviously he's now creating that culture there? Like, what do you think it is about that player that allows him to be the kind of through line from that Cup team all the way through to today?
Yeah, well, if you have the ability to do, to be a leader, sometimes you just need to be guided into it a little bit. And that was Brad. You saw his competitive qualities every night. He just had a competitive spirit that was, unbelievable. And, he's not a big guy. We all know that. And he found a way to be an impact player in the NHL. And then they learned the leadership side by being around a bunch of guys. But you can't do it unless you're actually, have those capabilities and to be a leader. And he did. And he did the work that he needed to do to get to that point.
No Patrice Bergeron, though, and it was expected that the House of Cards is all going to come tumbling down this season after they set the regular season records that they set a season ago. Were you surprised at how they were able to sustain that winning and didn't quite win the division, lost that to the Panthers on the final day of the regular season, but were right there from the word go this season?
Yeah, well, it's amazing what culture can take, how far it can take you. And when you have that, and, the Charlie McAvoys and a lot of the other guys, they've been part of it. So they know what the culture is now, and they know what it's all about. And players that go into the Bruins organization, they know what's to be expected of them and how they're going to have to be, how fit they're going to have to be, how they're going to have to fit into what their culture is. And if you don't, then you're not going to be a Bruin. And that's kind of how it's been built. And, I know Brad Marchand, I tell a little story. He, in summertime when they have development camps, he goes in and actually trains with the players. And he actually, he's very extremely fit. And he meets with all the young guys and whoever's in development camp, and he tells them, like, you have to buy into what the Bruins are. This is what we are. And if you don't, you're not going to be here. So he sets that tone right away. And then he goes and does everything that they have to do during the development camp. So it just kind of tells you, what type of person he is in player. So that's, you have that. And then it just leads to good things within your organization.
Yeah, I was going to say, not that anyone's dogging it in a development camp, but pretty hard to if the captain of the NHL team is right there with you. I mean, you played in a million series. You've won more than your fair share of them. How important is the idea of message setting early on in a season? I mean, we see it both ways. I mean, the Leafs came out in game one, and it was pretty apparent, at least to me, that they wanted to get in the Bruins' face. And I feel like you could argue the Bruins sent a message by, and not that they stayed straight away from physical stuff, but they kind of stayed above the fray. What goes into message setting? How much is that something, you know, you guys would talk about as teammates versus just something that's understood of the way any individual team needs to play a game one? Because I don't think it's the same for every team either. How important is that early on in a series?
Yeah, well, you know, the Toronto's going to have to stick to their identity. And, you know, they have a very skill-based team, but they got some players that compete hard. And they have to stick with that identity. I mean, they have a great coaching staff. They'll do a good job there of making some adjustments for tonight. And, you know, I think that they'll be ready. And you know, now they had a taste of it. Okay, the Bruins aren't going to fall for it, but we still got to keep playing our game. And, you know, they had great success all season. And if they continue to play that way, they will have that success that they think they can achieve.
What's the role of a coaching staff? And obviously it's, you know, a little different for every team, but you're not putting in a new system, I'd imagine, at this point in time. You know, you're not reinventing the wheel. Is it more of a mental coach at this point in time? Like, what is the role of a coach during the playoffs, and how important is it, and how different is it from the regular season?
Well, it's definitely, it's game to game, and they do have to make little adjustments, and the coach has got to stay obviously very composed and very patient and understand that they're got to be the leaders. They got to be the calm ones. And you know, I think, you know, when you get into these situations, they got to be that leader back there. And, you know, like I know Boston scored 2 power play goals, they'll make some adjustments on the PK, I'm sure. Or if they just felt that it was just some kind of breakdown, then they'll make those adjustments. And so there's all those little tweaks that go into a game by game, power play, penalty kill, you know, 5-on-5 stuff. And if, you know, the coaching staff, you know, there's so many, you know, most of the coaching staffs in the league are really great, and they'll make those adjustments like they need an in-game and you know, in between games.
Talking to Hall of Famer Mark Recchi. So the Leafs are one of the highest scoring teams in the NHL during the regular season. We've now seen 8 consecutive postseason games in which they've scored no more than 2 goals in each of those games. How different is scoring in the playoffs versus the regular season?
Well, it's definitely a tougher ball game. I mean, you're going in there, the checking is going to be there. You know, teams are going to defend. You don't win championships without being a team that defends and plays the right way there. And obviously, you know, goaltending is a big key. You know, Boston's been, you know, they're one of the top teams all year in goaltending. That's a big factor. You're going to have that, and they're just going to have to find ways to get in, you know, get some ugly goals, get some dirty ones. You know, I know Matthews will find a way because he's, you know, he gets inside. He goes to the dirty areas to score goals, and hopefully other guys follow. And that's what you hope happens.
Yeah, one of the big wrinkles in this series so far has been William Nylander. Guy's been more or less an Iron Man in his NHL career. Hasn't missed a game other than due to COVID in quite a handful of years. But all of a sudden, not available for the team. You know, obviously the players on the team would have more insight than I would in terms of looking at this. But how much does that throw a curveball? I mean, everybody on the team matters, but this isn't a fourth line winger that's going down. This is a guy who drives the bus for you. He's 10th in the league in scoring. How big of an adjustment would it be, and just how much of a bit of a shock would it be for the players on that team to all of a sudden not have Nylander available for game one?
Yeah, you know what, they've had some time to get ready for it, and you know what, it's an opportunity for somebody to step up, and that's how you have to look at it in that dressing room. This is an opportunity for somebody in there that's going to step up and be ready. And it might have to be 2 or 3 guys. Not make, you know, one guy's never going to replace Nylander, but you know, you might get the 3rd or 4th line. They might be, you know, like just a key to a game where they, you know what, they get that early when they bang one in, they get a couple goals. I mean, you look at New York Rangers last night, their 4th line gets 2 goals. Maybe you need that to help propel something bigger and better for this team. And if they do that, you know, if you get a group that steps up, a line that steps up, it's really going to help that team in the long run.
Yeah, Leafs did also get a 4th line goal. It was their only goal on Saturday against the Bruins. So, the Leafs aren't the only team come the postseason that don't give you much as far as injury updates are concerned. And we always hear that the team that wins the Cup, like all their guys are like, they're on death's door, right? The number of injuries that they've sustained over the course of the postseason that we don't know about. But how much in actuality, Mark, when you're on the ice, does like the the covert operations of injuries. And you know, I guess the idea would be keeping the opposition from targeting that injury. How much does that actually impact the game?
Well, you know what, if you know what the guy has, and if, you know, that definitely, I mean, if say if a guy has a shoulder, like, you're going to get hit a lot, you know, more than you even would. Like, you know, teams are going to say, hey, guys, listen, he's got a banged up shoulder. Let's keep playing physical on him. Every chance you get, you're going to have to finish your check on him. And you know, so it does have an impact. And you got to be, you know, that's why it's so secretive, and as it should be, because, you know, guys could get targeted. And, you know, that's the nature of business. You're trying to win a championship. And, you know, hey, if somebody's banged up, you're going to try and take advantage of that. And you know, that's the only way to go about it, really. And I think that, you know, teams keeping it, it's very important, but there's also a big thing that goes into it. Okay, if they do find out, then you're going to take advantage of it.
Maybe this is an unfair question to ask you, because I imagine there'll be 4, 5, 6 of them that jump out to your mind, but we always hear these stories, and I watch them with my own eyes, brutal playoff series. Is there any one series, or maybe it's a run, that stands out to you as just being more taxing, violent, hateful, whatever verb you want to use in there? Is there one mm-hmm. that stands out to you as being the kind of nastiest and gnarliest series or run of your career?
Well, yeah, it was probably in 2011 with Boston. It was a tough, you know, we had obviously 3 7-game series. We had the 4-game series with Philly, but it was also a very hard series. There was a little bit of rivalry there, and, you know, we had Montreal, Tampa, you know, and then obviously finishing with Vancouver, which was very, very tough. So, you know, that 2011 run was one that was, you know, extremely tough and a really hard grind, and physically every night that, you know, probably took its toll. I mean, I was older too, but I mean, I think it took its toll on everybody.
Mark, this was much appreciated. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Anytime. Enjoy the playoffs.
All right, we will. Possibly more than Saturday. Mark Recchi, 2-time Stanley Cup champion, Hockey Hall of Famer, Blue Jackets assistant coach, and you would think as part of the coaching fraternity now, he's like, mm-hmm. yeah, we got to protect these guys. We can't tell you what they have. We can't tell you how they're broken in all those ways.
He's part of both fraternities.
That's
like,
right.
He's like a player and a coach. It's like, yeah, I didn't want anyone telling them what I had, and you better believe when the Blue Jackets get in, that they will not be telling people what's going on. Can't be targeting Kent Johnson. Mm. God.
By the way, Scottie Scheffler just won yet again.
It's like, we don't have to let people know this guy's blue, Ben. Uh-huh. It's incredible. He's the first guy since Tiger, 4 wins in the last 5 starts. The numbers are in front of me. It's just everything he's done is the first guy since Tiger, basically. Mm-hmm. That's the super Coles Notes version of Scottie Scheffler, very good at golf. No one's ever looked more miserable to win millions of dollars than he did this morning.
Carolina.
It's cold. He had to get up early to finish the tournament. He was winning by 4 strokes.
Doesn't he get a multicolored plaid jacket?
He gets a tartan jacket, which is a wild move to give it a jacket literally the week after the Masters. And then next year, when he comes back, he gets to put on the tartan jacket and hit the ceremonial tee shot while they set off a cannon.
That's good.
You asked. I gave you the info.
No, that was the deal with Hilton Head. Anyways.
Now you do.
Okay. And we just mentioned that because it just happened right now.
Literally, Monday finish.
Yep. Wrap that up. So 2011 is a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like more than a decade.
I was going to say 100 years, but yeah, also that.
It's like Brad Marchand wasn't Brad Marchand then, but he was a different version of Brad Marchand.
Yep.
He was pretty good in that series. He played 16 minutes in Game 7 against the Vancouver Canucks. But, like, yeah, not wasn't wearing the C.
No.
Patrice Bergeron was part of that team, and Mark Recchi. Like, that was Zdeno Chara. Like, that was
19 points in 25 games in the playoffs that year.
Yeah.
So he's kind of Brad Marchand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some guys are just ready.
Yeah. But the question I was going to, like, different coaching staff.
Yeah,
it's almost entirely different roster, save for one dude.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about this culture thing.
Yeah.
Culture thing. What is that? What? Like, how? Just
how
because you wear the uniform, you play
you
in the
that?
City? Like, what begets what? Like, is it that they had this culture because they won and then
there's this expectation there. I just, that part is just hard for me mm-hmm. because it's one thing to have the through line of like a Patrice Bergeron, right?
Right.
He's gone. There's one yeah. guy. So like one guy makes the whole culture. That's literally the whole carryover from the last time they won a cup. Now I know they've been in a final since then and they've had some postseason success since then, but like, where, like, who is the face of this culture? Where does it, is it written somewhere? Like, what, huh?
Yeah, and again, how do you get it? I mean, and it's, again, these things just, they're self-fulfilling prophecies. Because I'm looking at that 2011 Bruins roster, and I'm like, well, they had a great leader such as Andrew Ferentz, I guess. I'm not saying he's not, but we think of him that way because he was on a team that won. And he was an Iron Man, and he played a lot. And I'm not saying this to disparage him, but if Andrew Ferentz had played on a Leaf team or played on the Canucks for that matter that year, we wouldn't be talking about him in the same way. I mean, obviously, yes, the pillars of it all, a Zdeno Chara, a Patrice Bergeron, the guy who I actually, if we're going to talk about Bruins culture, mm-hmm. who is the biggest flashpoint for nature versus nurture, the guy I've always pointed to for this is not Marchand, but it's Pastrnak. Because Marchand makes sense. He was incubated in the Bergeron, and Recchi was there, and Chara. But Pastrnak is the guy who I always, and it's unfair to do, and there's been too much of this now. This is more like a 3 years ago take, but that if William Nylander was in the David Pastrnak spot, would he have become David Pastrnak? And I think the answer is yes, because Nylander performs in the playoffs. And how would we feel about him if he was incubated in that Bruins bubble? But we don't necessarily also think of Pastrnak as a killer. We just think of him as a guy who scores all the time. It's a little bit of a different animal. So, yeah, it's nature, it's nurture. But the least of, I think the thing that has to be said is, I think you have to build the culture there. You can't take, and the Leafs tried to do this a lot, you can't take guys who built up a culture somewhere else. And again, why we had to go to the team that always lost in the cup final to find your culture, and Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton, you can't bring that in. It has to be built in the spot. You can carry it over for a generation, as we see in Boston. The coach is different. The GM is different. Like, there's so much turnover. But because it was built there and there were enough, and it wasn't just fringy pieces, right? Mm-hmm. Like, again, Brad Marchand, he wasn't Brad Marchand then. He just scored 19 points in 25 games in that run. It was a key pillar, and it carried itself all the way through. And I think that is what was always the promise of this Matthews era, was that they were going to win early, or at least not win-win, but just get some semblance of success. Win-win. And it never happened. And now you've got this.
How about just like lowercase win?
Well, they did that last year. Got
finally,
in 5 games.
Year 7. Okay.
Got smoked in 5 games.
Yeah, I would.
Like, is it different? I think the answer is probably not. Mm-hmm. But is it different?
Nylander's Pastrnak, you mean?
No. I mean, if they just win in the Canadian division when they should have and they had the simplest path, would they have a winning culture now? Or would you say, that's fake bubble stuff, it doesn't count? Because it certainly didn't happen with the Montreal Canadiens.
You can put whatever you want on this because it's been so bad and there's been so many losses and there's been so much heartbreak. But it's hard not to put this on the Maple Leafs culture and what... And also, I mean, it must be stated that Ryan O'Reilly saw it. And then, I mean, dollars and cents, there was a dollar figure. I'm sure that he's returning. Luke Shen said, thanks, but no thanks. But whatever.
I just wish O'Reilly would just tell us. Like, it's like, because it's like people do two ways with it. They're like, oh, he didn't want the market. He didn't want the core. Mm-hmm. And it's like, boy, I'd like the answer to that
or
question.
Or the culture, whatever it is.
Well, that's core culture.
Thing, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Again, like so much changes. They win the series. Maybe they win the series in 5 games, and this seems like such a stupid thing to say. But it does feel like you come from the outside looking in. If you were an NHL player who was traded to Toronto or you were signing there as a free agent, wouldn't you think that you're going to the place where it's like the fan base is tough. It's a tough media market, but the franchise makes it safe.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, maybe this is putting it too far, but like no accountability. Like frankly, like just... The failures, they pile up and you get almost a decade of it and everybody gets their contract and everybody gets to hang around. And even if you fail, if you're a middle six forward, it's the stars that wear it, but they're all paid anyways. It's just hard, man. And maybe that's what we're talking about with the culture. It's starting to change now with the Pastrnak contract. But yeah, this was a team that did apparently take less or seemed like they took less to fit it all together and stay together.
They also, I hate the contract stuff because it's then you're doing the thing where you're like denigrating Stanley Cup champion Patrice Bergeron to prop up guy who's won nothing, Austin Matthews. But it's like the reason those guys took less is because they weren't as good. Okay. Like when Brad Marchand signed his contract, he was not 100 point Brad Marchand. Okay.
Yeah. And Pasternak was as good and he got paid.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the other part of this is that the Leafs special guys, it's like, well, these guys took a little less. Yeah. Because he's Patrice Bergeron. And there's a reason we talked about him every year and we gave it to him every year because he deserved it, the Selkie. But we never had the Patrice Bergeron Hart Trophy conversation. You know why? Because he's not a Hart Trophy guy. Mm-hmm. And again, no one should be sitting here denigrating winner.
You are.
I know. But this is that's why the contract stuff went the way it was. That's also the culture stuff, though. Yeah. It can't be blind. I was somebody who was of the belief, and I still understand it, of pay the guys. Take away those worries, let them perform. But how can you not look at the sliding glass doors of what if you negotiated harder and held their feet to the fire? I mean, I think the answer to that is probably Austin Matthews or one of these guys would have said, I don't want to hear, get me out of here. I think that's actually what would have happened. But how can you not at least wonder what would have happened if things were harder instead of so easy?
Okay, so did the Leafs, you know, get unlucky that Austin Matthews hit a post, that he had an open cage that he didn't bury, that, you know, Ilya Samsonov, couple of screenshots that were perfect shots, maybe. I think you can also make the argument that Leafs actually got lucky on Saturday. Because the Bruins hit three posts in the first period.
Yep.
Darren Pasternak didn't score. Brian Marchand didn't score. It's hard for me to say, well, as much as, yeah, they controlled the play, I guess, in quotation marks at 5-on-5, that the Leafs, you know, just a couple of bounces away from winning that hockey game. Where was, like, the grade-A chance on that 4-on-3 to start the second period? Where was the keeping everything to the outside? And I guess the goals were scored from the outside on the power play. But where was the looking like the penalty kill that you hoped that they would look like acquiring some guys that kill penalties and Connor Dewar and Joel Edmondson. It's just, it's hard for me to say that it was, you know, a couple of bounces on Saturday.
It's just, it's hinge point moments. It's not bounces, but it is hinge points. It's not, they were, oh, this isn't game six against Tampa 3 years ago where, or 2 years ago where Matthews was millimeters away from tipping home the OT. That's not what we're talking about here. That is bounces. I'll hear bounces for that. It's not bounces when you give up a 2-on-1 and your goalie can't make a save. Don't worry. It's Joel Edmondson and Revo's fault, too. I'll lump them in, okay? But you can make a save there. And it's not bounces when you don't generate a lick on 4-on-3 with all the most expensive guys on the ice. I'm sorry William Nylander wasn't there. They're fine with Tavares, Marner, and Matthews as the forwards on their 4-on-3 unit. So it's not bounces for me. It's hinge points. And I firmly believe that's what tonight's going to come down to, too. I don't know what it's going to be, but there are going to be 2 to 3 flashpoint moments that we look at. Maybe it's a bad penalty. Maybe it's a missed chance. Maybe it's a weak goal. But something in that realm is going to be what decides this game tonight.
Yeah, it was the differentiating factor in the first couple of games of the Panthers series last year, too.
Boy, was it.
Minute and a half, 2 minute stretch, and there's the game.
Gone.
Yeah, it was 2 minutes.
And it can end that fast.
It can, yeah. I'd love to play that game back with the Leafs scoring on that 4-on-3 power play to start the second period.
Or a save on the 2-on-1.
Yeah. All right. We get to have a different conversation tomorrow.
Maybe.
It'll have more evidence one way or another.
This is true.
Game 2 from Boston on 680 News and Sportsnet. All right, this has been the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning.
Hakuna Matata?
Yeah, it's our motto.
What's your motto?
Nothing. What's the motto with you?